The Tablet Show, episode 24, with guest James Williams. Recorded live Thursday, February 23rd, 2012. From thetabletshow.com, it's The Tablet Show. Conversations about developing software for tablets and other mobile devices with your hosts, Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell. In this episode, Carl and Richard talk to James Williams about building games in HTML5. This episode of The Tablet Show is sponsored by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And now, here are Carl and Richard.
Thanks very much. Welcome to The Tablet Show. I'm Carl. That's Richard.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Hey. And we're here. We're all here for HTML5 sake. Gaming.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about today. And it's fortuitous because I found a blog post that I'm going to talk about right now about something new in HTML5.
A little better know a framework?
Yep.
Good theme song.
So I haven't had a chance to vet this out. I literally just went looking 5 minutes ago for something new.
Yeah.
And this was posted in Aishida, which is raishida.net, or if you want to go right to the post, tinyurl.com/html5translate. And it is as follows. HTML5 adds new translate attribute. A translate attribute was recently added to HTML5 at 3 multilingual web workshops we have run over the past 2 years. The idea of this kind of translate flag has constantly excited strong interest from localizers, content creators, and from folks working with language technology. And I'm not going to read it all, but typically how it works is authors or automated script environments will put the attribute in the markup of a page. You may also find that in industrial translation scenarios, localizers may add attributes during the translation preparation stage as a way of avoiding the multiplicative effects of dealing with mistranslations in a large number of languages.
Mm-hmm.
So it's needed because there's an example in the HTML5 spec about the B game, and a similar but real example from the author's days at Xerox, where the documentation being translated referred to a machine with text on the hardware that wasn't translated. So it would say something like, click the resume button on the status display or the span class panel message translate equals no continue button on the printer panel, right? So they're talking about what the button says, and you don't want to translate that. So the translate tag in the span says no.
Nice.
Yeah, the attribute.
It's a good idea. I mean, people are going to have to use it enough that it starts to make a difference, but it is interesting to see that mindset starting to happen. I mean, trying to embrace the multilingual web in a serious way.
So it's interesting. It's the first I've heard of it, but you know, that's no surprise for me because I got my head in a million different places. And if I'd like to hear some input on that from users, if you want to check it out and get a conversation going. So, Richard, who's talking to us?
Well, you may recognize this person. I'll read the name at the end because the subject line is Tablet Show number 20, which, as you recall, was the one we did with Paul Thorenstein's son. Where he talked about making a business around selling mobile apps.
Yep.
Dear Richard, and in parentheses, says, please, Carl, don't feel left out. I am transcribing Tablet Show number 20, listening to you talk with Paul Thorenstein's son about Own This World. And I had this flashback of being in a car with you, Carl, and Scott Stanfield. We were driving from Huckabee's party back to Anaheim. That was during Build last September. Carl and I were in the back seat, and you and Scott were up front, taking over the world as we drove 70 miles an hour. I am thankful that I had had a few bourbons before that car trip. Anyway, I am sending this in hopes of getting a Tablet Show mug as I drink massive amounts of coffee while working for you. Sincerely, Kelly J. Franklin. So for folks that are confused, yes, I just read an email from Carl's wife.
Yeah. Who is horrified.
Who is very dear to me. And yeah, I had taught, Scott how to play Own This World on my phone as I was driving.
And as he was driving and at 70 miles an hour, shame on Scott. But Kelly was like, is he really like playing a game while he's driving? I'm like, yeah.
No, I thought I was doing the driving. I was doing driving. Scott was playing because it scares Scott too much for me to play and drive.
That's right. You were driving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shame on you.
I wasn't playing. It was Scott. But I had to coach him on how to play. That's all. He was learning the game. He had a great time. He's now hooked on it. He's been playing in the San Francisco area. And as I dominate Vancouver and other parts of the world, it's a dumb game. Don't play it.
It's awesome, actually.
Anyway, yeah. So, you could drop a mug off at home, the Tablet Show mug, because I think she's earned it. That's a great email. Thanks, Cal.
Yep. Sure will. And with that, let's introduce James Williams. He is a developer based in Silicon Valley and a frequent conference speaker. He's the author of the book, Learning HTML5 Game Programming. He blogs at jameswilliams.be/blog and tweets at ECSpike. Welcome, James.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I know HTML games only as a consumer. I've seen a few, and they are very cool. Where do you start with games? Is it all about the canvas?
It kind of is right now at this point. If you're targeting mobile.
Yeah.
If you are just worrying about the best and brightest, the sky's the limit, but Canvas is a good place to start because it's just 2D.
Yeah.
When we're talking about games, what kind of games can you realistically build in HTML5?
It kind of ranges. I mean, right now the most popular things are sort of turn-based games. So, Words with Friends and stuff like that. That would definitely be easy to do in HTML5, as well as card games, poker and blackjack and that sort of thing. But there really isn't anything that prevents us from doing, your sort of first person shooter type games. I mean, I think the market will eventually move towards that, but we're kind of in our sort of Atari NES phase right now.
I got to admit that the last time I really played online games was, and this is going to sound, I'm going to sound horribly retro here, but Yahoo games had great card games, although they required Java, and I was a little reticent to install the JRE just to play games, but I do like that model of just being able to log in and then play with people that you know that can all sit down at a virtual table together and play. But as far as HTML5 games, I've just seen what's out there and gone, oh, that's cool. But I don't really play games anymore. Mm-hmm.
Isn't the reference app for a gaming platform Doom?
I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, I would probably say it's more like Angry Birds now, because Angry Birds. Okay, yeah.
But I think it's very. I mean, talk about first person shooter. Doom's quite an old game now.
Talk about retro. Jeez.
Yeah, it is an old game, but it's like every time somebody gets a new platform together, they're like, hey, can we make Doom run on that? Apparently somebody did it with HTML5 and JavaScript. They made Doom, and then they got DMCA'd. Mm-hmm. The owners of Doom said, you can't do that.
So what are the big challenges?
The big challenges right now are audio. Audio is a big pain for HTML5 because the different browsers support different formats. So Firefox supports a couple of formats, Chrome supports its own, and then IE supports its own, and then Opera is there. So to have something that works across, all the browsers, you have to do a bunch of wrangling with audio.
Doesn't everybody support H.264?
they're kind of different formats. So like I think Safari supports that, and then Chrome supports it, but H.264 is a proprietary format, so I don't believe that Firefox supports it.
Wow. Huh. I'm a little surprised, actually. I thought that was the standard for audio and video.
I mean, if I had my choice, the standard would be like, Ogg Vorbis and Theora.
Yeah.
Just because they're, open source and unencumbered.
Yeah. Well, unencumbered is an interesting question, too, because it's in theory open source, but it may be infringing on patents. Like, there's this whole game to be played with. Where aren't we better off using technologies that the companies that are building browsers have all agreed on sharing the patents around them?
Yeah, I mean, that is true. And when I say unencumbered, it's unencumbered up until this point, because we could always have new patents come out and lay claim to that. But Yeah, there definitely needs to be a new standard. I mean, I come from sort of a Linuxy world, so that's why I'm rooting for those two. But, you know, if it were WAV files, I'd be fine with that. Just something that was cross-platform that worked for everybody.
And the problem, of course, is that plugins aren't supported on mobile platforms. And unless the browser natively supports Ogvorbis, there's no way you can that you can use it, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And we really don't want to go down the you need to install a driver, you need to install this plugin path, right?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, we
install driver for your iPhone?
Yeah.
Yeah, what could go wrong with that?
I mean, I'm happy. Like, first, I was a little bit incensed that Apple said no to Flash, but, you know, it kind of has helped us move on and try and press, you know, the limits of the mobile web and mm-hmm. desktop web.
Because, you know, if we'd gone down the Flash path, we'd just be dealing with dead batteries and crashed phones.
Yes, definitely.
Right. I mean, we can argue over the merits one way or the other, and how they went about it was a bit rude, but they were right. And they've even convinced Adobe they're right.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. All right. Well, let's get back on this. What's your tool of choice? How do you build a game? Where's the sort of starting point for all this?
Right now, I'm kind of in my, like, Chrome-ish, like, very minimalist phase. So if it's a Canvas game or a Canvas demo or something like that, mm-hmm. I would just use raw Canvas and not really use a library. For WebGL stuff, the 3D side of the house, definitely 3JS is, in my opinion, the most awesome 3D graphics library for WebGL.
So that's 3JS?
Yeah, 3JS. But yeah, one of the main sort of benefits of 3JS is I used to do 3D stuff in college with OpenGL. And, you know, for anybody that's familiar with that, you have to sort of take into account a lot of different things, like where are all my vertices and what type of data structure am I putting that in and all that stuff. And 3JS allows you to... It's a scene graph library, so it allows you to operate on the object. So you just add your vertices to, you know, a 3D object, and you tell that object to move itself, you know, 10 units or whatever, and it does it, and I don't have to think about all of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
Do we need to get into some glossary elements here about understanding how games actually work? What is a vertices?
Vertices are the plural of vertex, and a vertex is a point in space that can have X, Y, and Z position.
So this is about working in 3D space, right?
Correct. And it also pertains to 2D space if you just chop off the Z position.
So something that's a vertex in this game might be my spacecraft, the enemy rock, the bullet, they're all vertexes?
A vertex would be a point in space that describes that object. So Your ship might have, you know, a bunch of different points, like 1,000 points that describe how it's drawn.
Right.
And a vertex is an individual point.
So typically, if we're talking about, let's stick with the spacecraft example, so I make sure we get this right. When we're talking about a spacecraft moving through space, do you have a vertex that sort of its quote-unquote location, even though it may occupy a larger space than just that point?
Correct. That could be its location or center of mass, and I need to stop throwing in extra stuff that I need to define later.
That's all right.
Now, I can work with the center of mass idea. I think that's pretty fair physics. But to me, when you describe it that way, I mean, I think, okay, that's like the point in the middle of the spacecraft. And then you describe, you know, how much further it goes around that point to sort of figure out where it is.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so what does 3JS get you in terms of working with vertexes or vertices?
What it gets you is in a traditional WebGL application, it's very sort of procedural. So it doesn't have sort of an idea of meta objects. So you have to determine, like, my ship, it has a 1,000 vertices that define 500 polygons of how it's drawn.
Right.
All of those vertices and faces and polygons, they have to go somewhere. And if I'm doing a core WebGL application, I have to think about that. I have to think about, okay, how are these going to be arranged in my application? How can I optimize that? Whereas with 3JS, I can just say 3JS.object3D. And to the array of vertices, I can just start adding vertices. To the array mm-hmm. of faces, I can start adding faces. I can add a material. And it does all of that hard stuff that I would need to do by hand normally. It does that for me behind the scenes.
And so far, you're just talking about being able to render that object with a 3D appearance.
Correct.
Okay. And then you talk about moving it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is easy. Anybody could do this.
Yeah, it's easy in XNA.
This is a complicated set of thinking. Do you use a particular tool to draw your spacecraft in the first place that breaks it down into these vertices?
One of the tools that I really like is Blender 3D. Mm-hmm. It's an open source project that's been around for like 10 years. And it just has a special place in my heart because I started using it back when I was in college. And there was this sort of patent-y type drama where they wanted to open source it, but they had to buy the rights from the company that funded it. And, you know, I paid like $20 to help them, quote unquote, free the sources. But with 3JS, you can use a bunch of other different applications. You could use 3D Studio Max or Adobe Max or whatever it's named now, Autodesk Max. Mm-hmm. Lightwave, OBJ format. It's a bunch of different formats that it has, handlers that allow you to render stuff with.
Okay. So you use any one of those tools. And my daughter just fell in love with Blender 3D. So let's stick with Blender 3D. So you use Blender 3D to draw your spacecraft and then it'll actually render it into this vertex language that HTML5 is able to pick up.
That 3JS specifically is able to pick up.
3JS is doing that for you. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm starting to see the relationship between these different pieces. If I'm going to start building a game, I guess that's where I start. Draw it in Blender 3D, use 3JS to actually render it on a canvas, for example, and then maybe figure out how to fly it around.
Mm-hmm. I'm used to the whole idea of building textures and drawing a 3D wireframe and mapping those textures on it. Is that still part of the process in HTML5?
Yes. I mean, there's a whole sort of texture material aspect to it. It's just like with the rendering aspect. You can dig as far into that as you like. The WebGL sort of parlance for it is called shaders. Right. And they allow you to, you can have multiple shaders and do all different types of effects and textures with them.
Yeah.
But you would probably, if you were using a 3D modeling application, you would probably do your textures there or in Photoshop or whatever and map them to your object. And then that way, once you come into 3JS space, your models already have the textures assigned to them at the vertices that they're supposed to be and all that other stuff.
Right.
I'm just staggered at the idea that all this works inside of a web page.
Yeah, me
so
too.
So what's WebGL exactly?
WebGL is a browser form of the OpenGL ES standard. And OpenGL ES is OpenGL for embedded systems. So, Nintendo DS, PlayStation, Xbox, all of those use OpenGL ES because they needed it to be a little bit more nimble than the OpenGL that works on the desktop.
Something a little lighter weight and smaller. I mean,
yeah.
OpenGL is an old standard. It's been around a long, long time.
Yeah, it's been around for ages.
That's not necessarily a good thing. It's got baggage as a consequence.
Well, that was one of the optimizations of OpenGL ES is just that it takes out some of the stuff that doesn't make sense for the platforms. And then WebGL does that again for the for browsers.
Right.
This portion of the Tablet Show is brought to you by our good friends at Telerik. Hey, can you ever have too many free tools to complement your development skills? I didn't think so. So our friends at Telerik are giving you now more than 30 free products for application development, automated testing, agile project management, and content management. And we're talking free. Not a trial, not a demo, but free, complete products supported by a community of over 440,000 developers at Telerik forums. From free ASP.NET Ajax, ASP.NET MVC, and Silverlight controls, to the free ORM solution and automated testing framework, to free agile management tools and content management systems, all of these and more are available to you for immediate download at telerik.com/freestuff. Most of the free products can be used for commercial purposes and give you access to supplemental support resources such as documentation and forms. Go to telerik.com/freestuff now and take full advantage of the available free of charge products. And don't forget to thank them for supporting the Tablet Show.
Okay, I feel like I sort of have a picture of the basic ideas here now. So now we get into, you know, really trying to build gameplay, right?
What does the JavaScript look like that you start with? Are there libraries for gaming that you can just download and use, or for purchase, or, you know, are there frameworks available? What's the standard, and what do you use?
There are lots. It's just an insane amount of different libraries. We were talking about 3GS a little bit before, and 3GS strictly deals with rendering of stuff, so it doesn't deal with any sort of gameplay elements. You would have to do that yourself, but there are other packages that do that. So there's one for 2D games called ImpactJS that's been getting a bit of a following, which is a commercial product. Is, I believe it's $100 a month, but there are many one-off projects that deal with a certain type. Like some people, their game library is just focused on side-scroller games, and then others are more general. And then Google came out with one about 6 months ago called Play-In, actually about almost a year ago, and that one. The cool thing about that is you write your code in Java, and I know some people might not like it since we're on .NET rocks, but
that's all right. It's all in the family.
You write your core sort of game code in Java, and then you can then write the sort of platform specific stuff. So, you know, if you have stuff that works differently in HTML5 or in Android, or in Flash, you can write that in that layer. So you get to share a lot of your logic, your core logic, and you can generate games that with the same code base can be played in HTML5 and in Android and in Flash. And then I think there's a sort of experimental iOS backend as well.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's cool.
What do you think of the Unity 3D approach? That's very much phone-centric, I think.
Mm-hmm. I've only looked at Unity 3D a little bit. The parts that I have seen of it, I do like. I don't like their cost so much, because the last time I looked into it, the Android package was rather expensive.
It's, yeah, $1,500 plus. If you actually want to do anything, it's another $1,500. It gets really expensive. You can't argue with $100 from Impact. That's a deal.
Which one do you talk about in the book?
I talk about 3GS in my WebGL section. And then for the Canvas stuff, I didn't really want to focus on teaching people one framework. So I just kept it with core Canvas. And that was pretty much it. And I did talk about some Google Web Toolkit stuff. But I tried to not dive into a single framework here or there for the Canvas or for the Canvas stuff.
Yeah, that's probably a good strategy. but if you did have to, you know, not if you did have to pick one,
that's hard to say. I mean, I like what I've seen from ImpactJS. I would guess if I had to hedge a bet on one and say this is what I want to write a book on or whatever, that is intriguing to me just because of the community that's around it. But that's not to say that any other framework is particularly bad, but that one has been very good in their sort of marketing and community outreach and making it accessible to hobbyist developers. And I wish more companies did that.
Yeah.
Well, and it does seem like that's the vital piece, is you don't want to be the only one trying to do stuff.
Definitely.
All right. Let's change gears a little bit. How do you sell an HTML5 game?
I haven't quite figured that out yet. But I would say that one way that you could sell an HTML5 game is if you sold through the Chrome Web Store, just because they have in-app payments. And Chrome currently has something like 150 million or 200 million users. You can also bundle it into a native app. So, I mean, there are different native app for mobile, that is. There are a couple of different frameworks that do that, like PhoneGap and Titanium Appcelerator, and right. I think Cintia has one as well. So you can kind of use the native part for what you need and just use it as a scaffolding to package your game.
And I'm staggered at how much stuff's in the Chrome Web Store. It's a lot.
Are people actually making money on HTML games?
I don't know that. I don't know yet.
Well, there are some for sale, and have they been... I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you know if anyone who's bought one... Just trying to frame it the best way I can.
I mean, that's kind of hard to say because I don't know many people who buy games. Like, I know a bunch of people who buy, like, console games.
Yeah.
And I know a bunch of people who play games online that aren't console games, that are casual games.
Right.
But I don't know that many that buy casual games.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, the reason why these consoles work is because you have to have physical material in order to play mm-hmm. the games. It's kind of difficult to pirate them. But something that's online that you can view in a browser, well, you know, there it is. What are you going to do? You know, you've been playing this game now for a half an hour. Insert a PayPal button here. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
I mean, and that's why I think that things like in-app payments will probably be the better model to use for a game that's online, because it makes it where, and I hate this word that I'm about to use, but it's perfectly descriptive. It helps the virality of a game to have it be free and have a sort of freemium model where they can play for free, but if they want to get extra power-ups or extra tokens or something,
freemium. They would. I like that. Freemium. I like that. Yeah.
I was struggling with virality.
Yeah, well, it sounds better than viralness. Because that sounds bad.
Yeah.
That sounds like I got something I got to get rid of.
And I would point out that that Steam's been incredibly successful, that Steam sells games for PCs and, you know, all in the cloud. It's completely virtual, but they're not HTML5 games. They're games that get installed on your machine.
Sure.
I'm just struggling with the perceived value equation here. That what is it about putting in a browser that instantly makes it need to be free?
That's a good question.
That is a good question. Browser equals free to a lot of people, no?
When I don't know that's fair, that I think, you know, what a disincentive to build a great game.
I don't know about you, James, what you think of this, but I see online games as sort of vehicles for advertising. I mean, my kid, every once in a while, my youngest likes to play a game with me that's on a particular website. And it's probably a Flash game or something, but there's ads all over that, you know, and not that I ever noticed them, but I think when I think of online games, I think that's what they're there for, to draw eyes to websites, to sell ads to them.
I think that could be one factor, but I mean, I wouldn't want to build a game depending on advertising sales, because that is, you know, such a sort of finicky way to live,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
because
is.
It depends on you getting more and more eyes and people that click on the ads and all that stuff. And
yeah.
And I know friends who just tone it out. Like, you know, one of my my roommate is a person who will not watch like Hulu or MSNBC or Fox or anything that has ads. He will download the podcast because the podcast version doesn't have ads. So, I mean, there are lots of people like that that will want to get at your content, but don't want to be bombarded with ads every 10 seconds. So there has to be a different model. And I think right now, probably in-app payments or ancillary, you know, sales of like, okay, well, if you pay us, you get this level or this version of the game before everybody else does, or something like that, something to build up a community around your product would probably be better than treating everyone as an extra set of eyes.
Yeah.
I guess that's fair. And you know, the freemium models do work. The Farmville model clearly works, that, you know, letting people buy stuff in the game itself is free, is a workable model. We just have to sort of contend with the challenges of doing those things. James, the games that people like are the ones they get to play with their friends. Is it really feasible to have an interactive game in HTML5 where, you know, six of my friends can play sort of in the same world kind of concept?
Definitely. It definitely is feasible. For HTML5, there are a bunch of technologies that can make it more immersive, like WebSockets, which are kind of a classy name for a TCP socket where you can pass data in both directions between people. So just because the sort of ending platform is HTML5 doesn't mean that any of the stuff behind the scenes change. I mean, you can still have a server that can, you know, do player discovery and matchups and all that types of stuff.
Well, if I can get back to the programming model a bit, are you using any kind of IDE, or are you strictly a text pad kind of, you know, notepad programmer?
I use right now, because I go through phases, but yeah. In sort of my JavaScript world, I am using Vim right now.
Vim?
Yeah. Well, it's also called VI, but
VI.
It's
okay.
Yeah, VI, Vim, same deal.
Okay.
So I use that just because it has a bunch of cool plugins for like interacting with Git and doing code syntax and highlighting and things like that.
Yeah.
So it works for just, you know, very minimalist computing, especially when you're, you know, trying to do a demo on a netbook, which won't run Eclipse or any other IDE very well. So,
yeah. And that's pretty cool that you're just using a text editor. Well, I guess if you think about it, you know, that's the way I edit most websites too. I mean, I kind of like I'm used to Visual Studio, you know, where you have statement completion and all that kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. you don't always get that depending on what you're working with.
Correct. And it is kind of hard to do code completion when you're working in a scripting language.
Exactly. So when you're using these frameworks, you start out, don't you usually have to build your graphical resources first? And I would say, for me, that would be the time-consuming part of game development, is what is my world going to look like? What are my ships going to look like? What are all my resources looking like? And now I've got tons and tons of these little files all over the place that I have to reference in my app. Do you find it difficult to work with that side of it, or do you like that side of it, or would you rather just write the code and let somebody else do the design work?
Many times, yes, I would rather write the code and let somebody else do the design work, just because that's something that someone else can probably do better. And I think that that's the main reason why people are kind of turning their nose up at HTML5, is because they don't realize how much is invested in that side of programming. You know, your level artist, your 3D modelers, all that types of stuff. And a lot of those people are still on console game companies, or they're still in the Flash space.
Yeah.
And that's why some of the games have looked a little bit juvenile or simple or whatever. The mechanics are still there. There's still awesome mechanics and things that we're doing in the game. It's just that it doesn't look like someone spent 1,000 hours creating all the models.
So let's talk a little bit about the mobile side of things. How different is game development when you're dealing with a mobile? I mean, especially I'm thinking WebKit, since it seems to be most ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. Is it pretty much the same?
No, it's not actually.
Hmm.
So one of the problems with the mobile space is that the things that work in mobile aren't necessarily the things that work on the regular desktop. Yeah, so right. WebGL generally doesn't work across all of the major mobile platforms. SVG sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. So to do something that's hardware accelerated, you would have to probably use CSS3.
Ouch. I got to presume that's way harder.
Yeah.
Well, that's one time where having a library that lets you do cross-platformy stuff mm-hmm. is helpful. So, and this is going to sound like a total plug, but Play-In, when it's on Android, I'm pretty sure it uses CSS3 before doing hardware accelerated scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely makes a case for the engines and these extraction frameworks just so they can hide that ugliness from you.
Definitely.
Although I can't imagine CSS3 is going to perform as well as WebGL if you had WebGL accelerating things.
Yeah, if you had WebGL, you would definitely use it, but CSS3 is a good compromise if the, you know, if your other option is using Canvas, which would be dog slow.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we just recognize it's going to be different species of games that work in a mobile device than what works on a regular machine.
Definitely.
Okay.
Well, what are you going to be working on next? Are you working on another book?
Everybody asks me that. Books are hard and they make you eat bad food and they don't pay well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do one book to sort of make your statement. If you do the second book, you're not learning.
Yeah. So I'm just like, just now losing some of the pimples and weight from my last 3 months of like eating pizza and Taco Bell and everything. Because it's like, okay, I have a deadline that I slipped 2 times. And my editor said, you better not slip this next time or I could eat some good food and cook it.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm currently playing around with Google Plus and doing a series on Google Plus of 3DS by example, where I'm converting all of the OpenGL examples from this tutorial site called mihi.gamedev.net, which has been around for forever. And they have OpenGL examples in like 20 different languages because it's been around for like 10, 15 years. So I've been working my way through that. So right now I'm working on the fourth one and I have posted the other ones. You can find them under the hashtag 3GS by example, all one word. But as far as another book, I'm not sure if I would do another book if it weren't doing a second edition of this one or helping out with a couple of chapters, but doing a full book by yourself is insane.
I know. Yeah.
Someday there will be an HTML6, you know.
In the year 2097.
Yeah, 2024 or something.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, James, thanks very much for sharing your knowledge with us. It's always good to talk to people who are doing things that you don't do. For me, anyway. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners really appreciated your advice.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll see you next time on The Tablet Show. It's